This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dose of video game music and conversation from OCRemix.org.
This week, we finally conclude our interview with Spencer Nilsson, take a crack at finishing the fight in a Halo-themed episode of The Big Ones, and invest heavily in disc-based technology with a Sega CD playlist. What? I don't understand what's going on.
Hi, everybody.
Oh,
we
goodness,
are still
are
alive. We should break into song.
Why?
Because I just said we are still alive.
Oh, well, I was yelling in surprise over that. I'm sorry.
Yes. You're not a video game fan, Steven, if you don't know what I'm referring to. That hit single from Prey 2.
Brian, there were two games you could have chosen that would have fit the bill. Prey 2 is not one of them.
It's not even a real game.
Oh, man. Boy, are we ever rusty.
Mm-hmm. So what exactly happened, Steven? Why are we talking like we were presumed dead for 3 months?
Well, presumably because that's exactly what happened. We just kind of stopped putting up episodes without any warning. And to this day, I feel a little bad about that. But long story short, that happened because we kept falling behind on our schedule, whether it was interviews or segments or just us doing our jobs wasn't happening. So we took a little break. I don't know. It was, you know, maybe about a month at this point. So it's been a little while, but we're in a much better situation to update this podcast as it deserves.
Absolutely. And we have a lot of cool stuff to do. We're finally finishing our Spencer Nilsson interview. I loved the first half of that.
Maybe not the wisest idea to take a break halfway through a two-part interview series.
We're dumb, okay? So we've got that, but it's a really good interview. So the second half is going to be great as well.
Yeah. And of course, we're tying the playlist into that so we can just have all kinds of good Spencer Nilsson memories.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's Sega CD, pretty much every installment is at least going to be Spencer Nilsson adjacent.
I think
Nilsson
about
adjacent.
Roughly half of it is Spencer.
And if you want some non-Spencer Nilsson content this week, we do have the Halo Big Ones. I'm glad Matthew is able to get us another one of those, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he has in store for Halo. Turns out the music's real good.
Okay, enough of us talking about things. Let's jump into the Remix Rewind, where we recap the recent remixes on OCRemix.org.
And in doing so, talk about things.
Dang it.
Will Rock will rock. We all know this. But did you know he can funk and groove and even do a little shoulder shimmy in a pinch? His brand new Super Mario Bros. 3 arrangement, Raccoon Rhapsody, took home the prize of an OCR-sponsored remix contest from Gamers Rhapsody, a Minnesota-based celebration of video game music. So we can say with 100% factual accuracy that this one is a real winner.
Will Rock isn't the only one venturing out from his comfort zone. Tamias 222 leaps headfirst into the rainforest with a Mega Man X3 remix full of warm colors and percussive textures. I'm not sure if Toucan Man is Mega Man canon, but it's about to be.
Silent Hill 2 isn't so silent anymore thanks to Paper Coelacanth and his ponderously D&B remix, Crowded Minds and Lonely Roads. Fresh from the fog, a strong rhythm and bright energy outshine all that impending doom. Psychological without the horror. Remixes and more, head over to ocremix.org. And now we bring you part two of our interview with Spencer Nilsson.
Sonic CD, last minute project for me, meaning that it was never intended to have a second soundtrack for the American market.
Right.
That was never part of the original design, probably 3 years before that project hit the streets, to be part of it. So here I am, woken up at 5 a.m. by someone calling from Tokyo saying, guess what, Spence? We got to get going on a soundtrack like yesterday, right? Give me a budget and let's go. So that's what I did. And we had to write music every single day. We, meaning me and my team, you know, which was, you know, on Echo, it was basically Dave Young and then a slew of programmers and people making sound designers, keep people creating sound palette for me. Jennifer Hrushka, great, fantastic musician and sound designer. And she was creating sounds for me. And then literally it was a 2 a.m. Meeting with the guy who ran the multimedia studio, a man named Joe Miller, fantastic guy, been in the industry. One of those brainiac guys who was a rocket scientist running, you know, super creative and super intelligent guy running the program there at the time and getting these games done. And he's literally sitting on the floor in the studio at 2:30 a.m. And that's, you know, he's putting in the extra hours in his office. He's wandering over because he loves music to see what I'm doing because he knows I'm busting my ass. We're all there, you know, 2:30 a.m. And he's sitting on the floor and he has this epiphany. He says, you know, I know you guys haven't seen much of this game yet because it's still being, you know, made. But he goes, there's a female character. He goes, have you thought anything about using maybe a female voice? And I went, oh, what a cool idea. But not with like lyrics, but just like an instrument. And then I thought, what about a whole chorus of or you know, a group of different voices? And that's when he said, pastiche. He says, there's this group, and I've seen them live, and they're incredible, and I think they're here in the Bay Area, and blah, blah, blah. And literally that morning, you know, so now it's maybe 8:30 or 9 a.m, and we're probably back at work by now. And And we get them, you know, we get their manager and stuff, and boom, 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 boom. Within days, they're in the studio with me. And we're writing together. And that became a huge thread, of course, that weaves that funky, quirky soundtrack together. And so if you listen to some of those songs, you hear them go. They're doing funny little quirky things that match so beautifully with the character, you know, and the storyline, or that the quirkiness of the sonic world. I mean, you can't take it very seriously, and I think that's where things get a little off track. You know, when you try to turn Sonic into, you know, a well armed, you know, robotic killing machine or whatever, you know, I think you've gone too far. There's a fun zone that a lot of these characters live in, and that exists within a storyline. And I think it's why most directors hate sequels.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, Pixar is kind of the rare, again, kind of outlier. They've been able to pull it off, but only on a couple of occasions, not on all occasions. But sometimes it should just be what it is.
Taking a project seriously doesn't mean you have to have a serious mindset.
Totally.
And
hey, making a quirky soundtrack is a serious business.
Yes, exactly,
right?
So, yeah.
Meaning that, yeah, there was no lack of professionalism or, you know, or budget concerns. I mean, we knew, you know, we had the opportunity to do something really special. Now, we had a limited, I mean, in a good way, because, again, the limitations are what caused the kind of the synapses to fire in a different way. Mm-hmm. Had I had 2 years to write Sonic with a big budget and all the freedom in the world, it would have never sounded like it does. We had to trust that that what we thought was good, other people would think was good. And that's kind of where you have to leave it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as it becoming a huge, wide, worldwide sensation, that's up to the world.
Yeah.
You can't create that ahead of time, meaning you have to trust in what you're doing and the people you're doing it with and have fun doing it.
And I feel like something that you can really embrace to make that less stressful is that time does not equals success, right? Like,
oh, God,
if you have 2 years to work on something, it does mean it's going to be better or more meaningful than your 2 week project.
And the stuff that connects with the audience isn't even the stuff that pays your mortgage.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the time, there's so many cool variables that happen with every project. You don't know, you know, some stuff that you do doesn't even get discovered until you've done something else.
Yeah.
That then people go back a little bit and go, oh, wow, that's totally different. Or, wow, that's really cool and very similar. Or, you know what I mean?
I think a lot of people who were close to your position, maybe even people a little bit earlier writing soundtracks for, you know, the first Nintendo Entertainment System or the SNES whatever, a lot of that stuff did go undiscovered because it was sort of a black hole. There was no internet. You heard it or you didn't. But now people are digging it up, and people who have such an appreciation for that style of music are rediscovering it and rebroadcasting it to the world. And so in that case, you know, you look at Manami Matsume, who wrote the music for the first Mega Man. She, you know, had good moderate success, wrote some good game soundtracks and was fairly well known. But now she's coming back to big events like MAGFest, and she's writing video game music again. And now there's an audience for her when before there wasn't. And that took a lot of patience.
You're talking to one.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have to tell you this.
My hiatus was self-imposed, meaning I chose. Well, yes, I chose to stop composing for a living because I had other opportunities and things that I was really excited to explore. And I can't tell you. I mean, I've been through some life things, too, with family. And I lost a mother who I'd been a caregiver for several years now. So it opened up a big chunk of my life again. Also, my kids have grown and are solid, meaning that they're out of the house, you know, meaning they're on their own and they've got lives and jobs and, you know, they're good. And so my wife and I made a huge 180 degree conscientious shift into new creative, adventurous life again as a couple. You know, we've been together 35 years, you know, still feel young, and yet, you know, it's like, well, let's get rid of then everything that's always felt like a hindrance. So literally, we went from a 2,500 square foot house we've been in 25 years to a 700 square foot apartment that we hope never to be in. You know what I mean? Purposely. my point is that you have to put yourself in situations that cause you to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's in your personal life, you know, when things are, you hit a rut, you know, or whatever, you've are surviving an illness, whatever it could be in your life. Sometimes it takes dramatic, gut-wrenching risk in order to shake yourself into a new level of creativity, imagination, positive reinforcement, all those other things that affect how you create. And also, you know, that's part of how you live. So it's all one being, you know, and Sonic CD is a great example of having, you know, a lot of, adversity, you know, to overcome in order to get it physically done in time, but also to keep it really fun and exciting and like nothing anyone had ever heard. And to this day, it's still like nothing anyone has ever heard. And I think we were talking in the last podcast about the organization that you work with, mm-hmm. that put out the tribute album.
Right.
Had someone not written to me from Australia, I would have never known about that.
I know. Yeah.
And it was such a honor and a privilege and so exciting for me to hear other people's interpretations of some of those pieces of music that it really was it was a real eye opener. And that was part of my design to decide to go back into creating soundtracks full time. And sure enough, without doing any more than deciding that, doors started flying open mm-hmm. again. And people are like, great, perfect timing. People are really into the stuff that you were doing, and let's put a new twist on it. Let's do this again.
I mean,
people
just been listening for years at this point. So
yeah,
they're probably
exactly.
Ready.
And, and I feel bad as an artist. I mean, I've done a lot of music since then, but not stuff that people would collect and go find, And so
I think that's just the nature of being someone who's interested in the art itself, not the product, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the industry. And to be honest with you, I was out of sync. Mm-hmm. With an industry mm-hmm. that was easily, 5 to 10 years younger than me.
Sure.
And I wasn't in line with the culture of it. But anyway, I was a little out of sync. So when I left, I was really excited to get back into scoring films, to be honest, because I like linear score.
Mm.
I have to admit, because when you spend hours and hours and sometimes days and painfully, trying to put something together so that this one cue hits, and the light, comes across the camera just as it's revealed that this guy is, behind the curtain or whatever, and it explodes at that same way uh-huh. when people watch it every time. That's really fun. You get to kind of sync the action in a way. I mean, you're less probably noticed, quote unquote,
right.
as a member of the creative team, but the overall experience is something that's really exciting, and I enjoy it as a fan, as a consumer of films.
Yeah.
But I also like doing it. I like the math of it.
I think
games are more like that now than they ever were.
Sure,
there's a lot of animatics, and there's a lot of quicker interplay between the system and the music, which couldn't even be done when I was in games.
Well, I get that's maybe a good question. Now that you're back from your self-imposed exile, how do you see music differently? What's changed with you?
I have a lot more experience. I'm more trusting in my own instincts uh-huh. than I was even back then. I was being forced to trust my instincts then, which is a good thing.
Right.
But it's like Battlefield. The battlefield promotion kind of thing. You get promoted because that guy got shot.
Right.
He's gone. So yes. You take the flag and run. And by the way, you're a lieutenant now, that kind of thing. More my life experience, I'm a lot more trusting, that I can do this stuff and that I have good ideas,
mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that from, I hope it doesn't come across as in any basis being egotistical or saying that I do great stuff. I don't. I do a lot of shit. We all do. Creative people, if you create a lot, you're going to do a lot of shit, and people don't see it and they don't hear it, and again, Pixar, their stuff is crap until it's not crap anymore. And you can quote me on that because it's in their book.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, when you read any of the books about by or for Pixar, you'll read those same words. They throw shit against the wall for a very long time, years, before anything comes close to sticking enough for them to go, okay, now we're going to make a movie.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, characters fall by the wayside, entire scripts fall by the wayside, because I have personal, knowledge of this and have seen it happen. Mm-hmm. My partner worked on a version of Brave 10 years ago.
Oh, geez. Wow. You know? There must be some insane metaphysical broom closets where there are all of these files of discarded and put on the shelf ideas over there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's so, sometimes it's really eye-opening to see or hear early versions of something that never see the light of day and sometimes never should, you know? Mm. So my point is, I've got so much more experience from doing everything from commercials to 3D virtual, you know, experiences to, you know, small independent films to huge international games, to where I know that the music I like to write, people like to hear. That's about as scientific and metaphysical and magical as it is. Literally. The notes that I like to put in a certain order resonate in the ears and the hearts, therefore, in the souls of people, other people. Some people like to write and create dissonant music. Mm-hmm. And only a certain portion of the population can not only relate to that, but then to the point where they seek it out.
It kind of sounds like you are just comfortable with your audience and comfortable with what you like to do.
I don't expect anything, you know, other than I'm going to do what I'm driven to do. Hopefully the people that are conducting, you know, the people that are directing and or producing, and I philosophically connect and have a same moral base and can be trusting in each other. And that, you know, again, because I am where I am in my career, and I tell the students this, you can't get to a point in your careers where you get the ultimate success, which is the choice of saying no to something.
Yeah.
Until you've built enough of a trusting audience and a, you know, group of similar-minded people throughout many industries. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Literally, you have to have worked on enough stuff that your name is synonymous with trust and follow through, and you know, you don't have a bad reputation yet. And there's enough stuff out there that people can listen to and go or see and say, yeah, okay, he has a certain bar of professionalism that he's, you know, he's judged by until you have that. And yeah, there's no job below you if you're going to be really successful in this industry. You have to be willing and able to do any job from, you know, wiping the chin of the lead singer who just puked in the booth because he's been drinking all day, to wrestling with the label for your rights and your budgets and your band, or, you know, wrestling with the director of the game to get your character in it. You have to have so much humility and you have to have so much experience to back that up that should start today. You should be a big sponge. And if you never open your mouth, you're one of the best students in here because it means you were listening and not trying to tell me how great you are already. Because, and again, I think you're right. I think it's that sense of I need to have the sensation now, you know? Mm-hmm. And I get that because the society is overstimulated with that kind of gratification. I want the email now. I want the tweet now. I want the movie clip now. I want the game now. I want the app now. And everyone's going for the now and they're missing what's happening around them, you know? So that's my kind of approach, you know, philosophically to these things. As soon as you decide what you're going to do and you've had enough experience doing it, the universe will take care of the rest.
Mm-hmm.
If it's earned, meaning you literally do have the chops and the experience and all those other things. You've got the context. All you need to do is go, psst, by the way, I'd love to write some more game music right about now, you know?
Yeah.
And what happens?
Man, you know, I wish I had heard. I mean, I've never been a particularly presumptuous person. I wouldn't say that. I had the opposite problem when I was younger, right? But that idea of patiently working at, in and around the craft and just being the type of person that you want to be who can then take on those sorts of jobs and start making those creations rather than starting by angling for the kind of creations and contacts you want to have.
People so often, yet that's, you're right on the money. Absolutely dead bullseye, Stephen. And that's exactly the key, is that what people tend to try to do is become the occupational title, whether it's got a slash or a comma with all these other titles, instead of, like you said, become the kind of person that you want to be, the kind of person you've always looked up to, you know? Have mentors, lots of them, deep into your life. And mentors do not have to be older than you.
Oh, right.
You know, don't think that mentors are just retired old guys, old white guys, you know, who sit around and give advice. No, it should be people that inspire you, people that do things that interest you, even if it's not what you do. You don't have, the mentors don't have to be in your industry, but of course people in your industry will give you all kinds of wisdom. But yeah, don't have to be the thing today, because then what do you do tomorrow if that doesn't work out? I tell the students, I said, all of you will not graduate. It's a, just a known fact. And they all, you know, get deer in the headlights. What do you mean? You know, what are you saying? You know, all I'm saying is not all of you are going to graduate. Some of you are going to self-select out because you're either, you can't hang with it, you don't have the passion for it, or financial reasons, or your health, or your family, or something. You'll find you love making, or you love playing video games, but you hate making video games. They're completely different things. So try to be the best person, the happiest person you can be, because if you're happy, you can't be dissatisfied, right?
Yeah.
It just, it's an impossibility. So if you're satisfied and you're happy, doesn't matter what you do, you know? So don't try to shoehorn yourself into this title that you've come to believe holds all of your dreams and abilities. There's a good chance that it ain't what you think it is. I'll guarantee you it ain't what you think it is. You haven't even begun to look behind the curtain yet, you know? So let's give yourself some time to look behind the curtain, do some things, and then decide if it resonates with you, and second of all, if you're good at it. Talent is never, ever, ever the first, the highest level graduate, you know, valedictorian, first in his class, one of the best artists we ever had at the college where I was president, Expression College for Digital Arts here in the Bay Area. You know, he was the first person ever, at least to the date, of getting hired right out of school by Pixar. That rarely ever happened. But you know where he was hired into was the gift shop. He's the best animator we ever had. And they hired him into the gift shop absolutely a testing ground. Does he fit our culture primarily? What's he going to do when John Lasseter's, you know, kid comes in and breaks three vases, or, you know, a statue of Woody, you know, whatever, right. You know, what's he going to do when you know, people are talking about animation all around him, yet he's stuck ringing people up. You know, is he going to be a shoegazer complaining all the time, you know, and always on his phone and not in the moment? Or is he going to be absorbing every possible thing about this culture, this fantastic place that he's been allowed to enter into, and move himself so quickly out of this position and into the animation department? Everyone knows that that's why he's there. Hopefully he knows it, you know, and if his radar is up and he understands the concept of delayed gratification, he gets it, and he'll quickly be out of the gift shop.
So what I love about that conversation and about the advice that you just offered is that it applies directly to music and also literally everything else you will ever do.
Every conceivable occupation, job, team member that we can conceive of. And so my point is that students stand out to me, you know, that I tell them, they don't even have to know your name. But if you are one step ahead of them in pulling cable or getting coffee or being polite or saying excuse me or noticing something needs to be done and not even asking for the permission to do it, but just doing it because it's production and it needs to be done, you know, whatever. And not saying a word the whole time and smiling and making eye contact so that they have an ally when someone, the producer, the junior producer, or the script consultant, or whoever it is, looks around and goes, who can help me? And they see you looking at them with a smile on your face saying, I will help you. They will say, who was that kid? I don't care what rock you have to turn over. Find him and make sure he's on the set tomorrow. I don't even know what he'll do, but make sure he's there, because there are so few people in the industry that do that. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a weirdly powerful thing that very few people mention or teach, I think. So,
well, it's a huge, well, that's why I still go back and teach at the college I was the president at. I don't get paid, meaning I don't do it for the money. I do it because I'm still in this industry. I plan to work in another 30, 40 years if I can. I want people around me that I trust, that I want to be around, that have a great sense of humor, that are energized and excited about what they do, but not to the point where they get in my personal space. I want people with the basic, you know, thank you, hello, goodbye, yes, please, you're welcome, the basics, and they want to do what I do. That's where how you get in the door with me.
Mm-hmm.
And people look at me like, really? I don't have to know Pro Tools 12.8? And I say, if anything, I hope you don't even ever bring it up. I'll see it on your CV that you know it. I don't want to talk about gear. It's never about the gear. It never will be about the gear, you know? So, that, you know, that's, again, that's a sign of insecurity when people want to either blame or focus their abilities around the equipment and the technology. That's a clear sign of insecurity.
Mm.
Again, I want to talk about movies and games and books and music. You know, I don't want to talk about amps and mics and versions of this or that. That's not what that it gets me excited. The best producers, if we're going to put air quotes around a word, the best producers in the world walk into a room, a space. They say, what are we trying to accomplish? What do we have to work with? Oh, okay. Two cans and a string. Great. Let's make a record or let's make a game. It's not about the gear. We'll figure that out as we go. We may be able to do it with two cans and a string.
Well, I guess maybe that's kind of a good question to sort of finish off with. What kinds of projects are you most excited to work on these days?
I have one and as many as three new games, and I'm really excited about those.
Oh, nice.
Yes, because first of all, they'll be the first, you know, official back in the industry, big games that I've done in, you know, 15 years. So I'm really excited about that. And I also have on the brink of starting are two feature films. And I'm really excited about both of those because they're one. And again, anything can happen. You know, these are things that are on my calendar, on my schedule for the next year and a half.
Uh-huh.
But any one of them could come or go and more could come on and few could drop off. You never know. But these are the things that I'm working on now and excited about. And I'm really excited about the games, I have to say, because I haven't done it in so long. And also because of who I'm going to be working with. And that's, you know, people that I've worked with in the past. And unfortunately, none of this has been announced publicly.
Sure.
So I can't give you titles and all that stuff. But I will, when they are announced, I'd love to come back and talk specifically about what I am doing, even in the process of it. Might be kind of fun to do a...
Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
You know, something from the studio even. And, you know, maybe play some early, you know, mixes of something or something like that and do a live thing. It would be kind of neat. But anyway, so I'm excited about all that. And I'm building a new studio to be able to do all this. And it's literally right here in the wine country around the corner from my house. So I'm stoked about that. I literally can come home at lunch, you know, and so really excited to be building a new studio because I haven't done that in years. And then I'm working on a rock opera, a modern opera.
Oh, really?
That I wrote. Yeah. And that's, I'll be showcasing that, meaning I'll probably be performing the music from it with some visual aspects in kind of a showcase environment in some cities that I'm looking to hopefully get people involved. I'm thinking I'm probably going to crowdsource the production of this,
okay,
which I'm excited about trying. So I'm working on that. And that's been a big focus for the last several months. And now I'm going to shift into the games and the films for a little while and try to build the production of the opera. I say opera. It's not in the classical sense an opera. Mm-hmm. It's more like Green Day doing American Idiot on Broadway.
Okay.
So that's,
okay,
it's more
I'm
musical
following you.
Theater. Yeah, more musical theater. So,
cool.
Songs.
I mean, that sounds
know,
like a pretty huge variety to be having all going on at once.
Well, that's, you know, what they say, you know, not to be, you know, cliche. Variety is the spice of life. And if you can, because that, you got to be excited to get up and go do this grind every day. I mean, it's work,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and you've got to be really digging it. I'm not going to bite off too much, you know, so that I can't have fun doing it. I mean, but I'm prolific when I'm excited to be working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm excited about what I'm working on, I write quickly and I produce quickly. I don't get mired down in, you know, gee, God, I wish, you know, all the hi-hats were hitting right on the beat. You know, if it has a good feel and everyone's vibing in the studio, we're on to the next
thing.
That's
awesome.
And that's kind of how, again, how you make magic. I didn't know these soundtracks were going to be big when I was making them. I was hoping people in the game world would accept me into their club, you know? And so 20 years later, the fact that you even care to do this interview is all the success I could hope for. Meaning I've made plenty of money, you know, I'm not rich by any stretch, but that's not where the success and the fun lies for me.
Right.
You know, I'd much rather have a good time, work with great people, and at the end of the day, you know, feel really good about the work you've done and barely pay the mortgage than I would, you know, driving six different cars and you know, having multiple homes and hating my job every day.
That's a good attitude to have.
So, yeah. So my point is I'm happy they're calling. I'm excited to do the projects with them. And I'm excited by what the future holds. You know, we'll just go in rock and roll and get these things done and have fun doing them and see what happens.
I mean, I don't even know what the projects are, and you've gotten me excited about it. So yeah. Well done. So is there any website or any social media account that you update with this kind of stuff, or should we just wait for the next interview?
You know, I will. I have to.
Yeah.
Meaning that I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
So I haven't shared a lot of this yet with the world. I mean, literally, I haven't announced in any official way that I'm returning to the game industry and taking projects and stuff like that. And it's kind of nice because I don't have to do that. I mean, I would do it, right. You know, but right now I've got enough on my plate where I haven't had to. So that doesn't mean I shouldn't, though. So I am going to create a new site where I'll be, you know, giving updates. The best at it in the world, if you ask me, is Bear McCreary.
Oh, man.
I do not know where he gets his energy, his time, and his stamina. And he is a mentor of mine. And I think I mentioned that maybe in our last interview.
Yes,
he and
I wish
friends.
We had time for the whole Bear McCreary
story.
Yeah,
no, we don't. But he and I are friends, and I'm going to be leaning on him emotionally for tips and tricks on how he keeps so many balls in the air at one time. And not only does he do multiple projects, but he blogs and he video blogs and he, you know, does short films, you know, within his own project. I mean, it's ridiculous. So anyway, I'll be asking him how he, you know, what doppelgangers he's got working
cool.
for him to keep it all going. So I'll keep you guys posted.
That's amazing. Well, Spencer, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about all this stuff. Like,
well, you'll probably either use, you know, 14 minutes of it, or you'll break it up into a multi mini series.
This might have to be a two-parter. I won't lie.
Right on. Well, I hope you found some gut nuggets in there that work for you. And I'm always appreciative of hearing from you guys. And again, to the audience out there, nothing means more to someone creative and especially, you know, a musician to hear great feedback on the work that they've done. So I don't think it's lost on me. I am as humble as I was the day I wrote it. And I'm just happy that I'm still writing music, and I hope you guys will dig the stuff that we're working on now. And will come back and tell me so. And tell me if you, well, you know, don't be too harsh, but tell me if you don't like it, you know. Right on, man. Okay, good talking to you, Steven, and we'll catch up again soon.
That sounds like a good plan. And for now, we will take the audience back to the show.
Welcome to The Big Ones, a look at popular game music and what makes it so loved. This week is all about the game-changing Xbox shooter, Halo Combat Evolved. Halo's influence on video games really can't be understated. While GoldenEye showed that first-person shooters could work on consoles, Halo showed that they could thrive. The control scheme, recharging health, and two-weapon carry limit changed the way that almost all developers approach shooters, and the game's ripples continue to this day. It sold extremely well, with a combo of an engaging single-player and many multiplayer options. And, as a launch title for the original Xbox, Halo solidified Microsoft's choice to enter the gaming market. The game's setting is a bit of a mashup of several space opera stories. It's set hundreds of years in the future, where humanity has discovered faster-than-light travel and used it to travel to other planets in order to escape an overpopulated Earth. There's also the presence of ancient technology with the Forerunners, an ancient race that built the titular Halo, a massive ring that's habitable and floating in space. And then there's the Covenant, the main antagonist of the game, who worship this ancient technology. The ancient meets future dichotomy informs the composition of the soundtrack, creating a rich atmosphere few games of the time have accomplished, much less first-person shooters. Halo is a space opera, and the music fits that criteria, but it goes for a different approach. By different, I mainly mean it isn't trying to be Star Wars. It certainly pulls from a lot of different sci-fi sources, and some tracks have a John Williams-esque soaring string section. But the soundtrack also has elements from rock, opera, Gregorian chanting, and African percussion. Martin O'Donnell, sometimes called Marty, and Michael Salvatori composed the soundtrack to have a feeling of importance, weight, and a sense of the ancient. The result is a diverse yet consistent score, with tracks varying from slow and intimidating to exciting and driving. But before we can get into any of the other tracks in the game, we need to listen to the three main themes. There's the two chants, the slowly rising harmonic one, and what's usually considered the Halo theme. Then the third percussion-heavy theme. All three of these themes come up over and over again throughout the soundtrack. The first two themes are both examples of Gregorian chants, the second one more than the first for real sticklers. Gregorian chants are a medieval musical form named after the Gregorian monks. It's monophonic, meaning that everyone in the choir is singing the same note with no doubling or harmony. Some connected musical forms have a little bit of harmony, but it's always simple. So from before the player hits start, the atmosphere is ancient and religious to match the Forerunners and the Covenant. The third theme takes a different approach, starting with a repeated drum line, then a repeated string line that builds to the main melody. These three are all in the Halo theme heard in the title screen, and are quoted either with different instruments or directly in almost every level of the game, so they stick in your head. Covenant Dance starts with drums similar to this third theme. Then it layers in chorus from the intro. On a Pale Horse is a callback to the main theme on violin. Perilous Journey has it in the pseudo pizzicato and horn section. Finally, I want to talk about the rock influences. Marty O'Donnell is a guitarist, and you hear a lot of his rock influences in the score. However, something I love about this first soundtrack is that the game never has an electric guitar over a drum kit, like a traditional rock band. The track, A Walk in the Woods, has some bass with gated drums and reverb. It sounds like it could be a new wave hit from the 80s. But whenever an electric guitar comes in, it's either with the orchestral percussion or the virtual orchestra. Back to Covenant Dance, you hear the palm-muted guitar as a kind of percussion. There's even a track called Rock Anthem for Saving the World, but it has the guitar over orchestral percussion and vocals. This keeps the guitar from sounding too out of place in the space opera, but it injects enough modern sensibilities to keep things interesting. Halo changed the game for first-person shooters. Literally. First-person shooters haven't been the same since Halo, unless they're deliberately throwing back to the pre-Halo era. And the game still holds up fairly well if you play it today. Some of the virtual instruments aren't as amazing in the first game as the full orchestras in the later entries, but the music still evokes the ancient and mysterious atmosphere today as well as it did then. Thanks for listening, and listen well.
What do we say at the end of the show?
I think we say goodbye.
No, I remember. We say, what a show, what a show.
Oh, right. What a show it has been.
To show our enthusiasm and mild nostalgia.
Yes, and our enthusiasm for mild nostalgia.
Yeah, speaking of Sega CD.
All right, everybody, if you want to learn more about OC Remix, head over to www.ocremix.org.
Yes, Twitter, that is also a great way to get in touch with us. We are OCR Podcast over there, and you can submit playlist ideas and stuff.
And if you want to submit a playlist suggestion that's more than 140 characters, you could do so at podcast@ocremix.org.
What a good idea. Is that an email address?
Nope.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brian. This has been a delight with you today.
Absolutely. You know who else I want to thank?
Oh, yes. Well, I was just thanking you as a prerequisite. I really want to thank Spencer Nilsson, a very smart man who I enjoyed talking to greatly.
A supremely thankable person.
Yes, that's what I always say. And also Matthew Tusseroni, also known as Major Third, for putting together a segment that reminds me of like a time that feels bygone at this point. I feel like I haven't listened to or played Halo in a long time.
Halo games are still coming out.
Yeah, but it's not the same without Mr. O'Donnell.
Yeah, that's true. I was playing through Destiny recently and got to hear some Marty O'Donnell music. It was really nice.
Oh, that's lovely. Mm-hmm. I want to listen to that soundtrack.
You almost said I want to play Destiny.
I very carefully chose my words there, Brian.
All right. Well, speaking of very carefully choosing things, let's head into this week's playlist. The playlist is a weekly collection of listener-submitted recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme, Sega CD music. Sega CD boot up screen from the Sega CD and submitted by Square Evil.
The battle theme from Lunar the Silver Star, submitted by the MDisc Playlist Podcast.
Title Tempest Present, US version, from Sonic CD and submitted by Phoenix Down.
Afterburner from Afterburner 3 and submitted by Kyle JCRB. Dilapidated Building from Batman Returns and submitted by Wilson. From Popful Mail and submitted by Zachary. Track 12 from Batman Returns and submitted by Lion Tamer. We'll be right back. track 6 from Spider-Man vs. the Kingpin and submitted by me. Speedway P Mix from Sonic CD and submitted by me. Been listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is Final Fantasy Remixes. We'll be talking with Alan Brash about Final Fantasy arrangement album Mog's Mixtape, because we're thematic like that. To submit your own suggestions, or just say, hi, Koopo, hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast, email us at podcast@ocrremix.org, or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom...
Now it's swing time. Flying for justice. Swing time. Take no prisoners. Swing time. Bring home the bacon. Swing time. Knockin' trouble out.